This is Mae Brussel, and it is the second half of World Watch's program number 790. And if you missed the first half of this broadcast, tape recordings of the broadcast are available for you. And otherwise, just get in your house a little earlier and set your clock and timer so you get the full hour of the broadcast. It is a one-hour broadcast. I'm talking about an article by Victor Marchetti, the author of CIA and the Cult of Intelligence, about a policy that was formed towards the end of the Carter administration when Ronald Reagan was to come into office. The title of the project is called Decapitation, and it is the use of nuclear strike capability, ICBM, submarine launch, ballistic missiles, SLBMs, long-range bombers, and cruise missiles for attacking the Soviet Union to get a war-winning potential and a first strike, possibly to decapitate the Soviet Union, to cut off the heads. They refer to the lopping off of the heads of the Soviet government. A gentleman called me from Berkeley this morning and wanted to know if I was active with a group of people that want to get Ronald Reagan impeached. And I said, of course not. The old man is 75. He's dying, and for all purposes, he's out. And I'm interested in getting the team behind Ronald Reagan. I said, what about Jimmy Carter? Oh, this gentleman said he was for human rights. I said, yeah, that's why we had Jonestown, where 912 mostly black people were experimented on and allowed to be murdered. Ronald Reagan couldn't get away with a Jonestown, but Jimmy Carter did. And people think of Jimmy Carter as the great liberal. Jimmy Carter graduated from Annapolis, and he appointed Zbigniew Brzezinski to be his national security advisor, or rather, Brzezinski appointed him from the Trilateral Commission to represent their interests as the front man for the presidency. But Jimmy Carter went along with these ideas. Marchetti says clearly Jimmy Carter made an indelible mark on the U.S. military thinking by advancing the decapitation strategy, urging and directing his national security advisor. Carter was mesmerized by Brzezinski. Woody Brzezinski was jokingly referred to as Woody Woodpecker by Carter's Georgian friends and members of the National Security Council. Jimmy always wanted to clear everything with him. One source described Brzezinski as Carter's Svengali, just as Richard Pearl has that role in the Reagan administration. Brzezinski discovered Jimmy Carter, tutored him, molded him, that ex-naval officer and governor, under the auspices of David Rockefeller and the Trilateral Commission. Brzezinski is one of those articulate European emigres like Henry Kissinger who have developed a subculture within the national security establishment and who have influence greatly disproportionate to their true value, said a member of the Rockefeller Council on Foreign Relations who worked closely with both former national security advisors. And behind them again is this faceless man from Germany, from a chemical family in the chemical business that would have to be under those circumstances, the IG Farben compound, a gentleman that went from Mussolini's Italy and Nazi Germany to the United States and recruited Henry Kissinger, this faceless Fritz Kramer, who sits on the National Security Council right now, the past 6 years with Ronald Reagan. Let me read this again from a member of hardly a left organization, the Council of Foreign Relations. He said, Brzezinski is one of those articulate European emigres, like Kissinger, who have developed a subculture within the National Security Council, the national security establishment, who have influence greatly disproportionate to their true value. And that's exactly the team, Kissinger and Brzezinski and Fred Ickley, who are making up the plans for the next 20 years. This article continues by Victor Marchetti. Brzezinski studied at Harvard, as did Kissinger. He set up his Soviet affairs at Columbia University with Rockefeller money. He's a protege of Rockefeller. He rose in the establishment through the National Security Inner Circle, the National Security Council. And he went on with Jimmy Carter after the Watergate affairs, and a Democrat was elected to represent the National Security Council. Brzezinski wrote a book called Power and Principle, where he describes how he met Jimmy Carter and how they got along and how he developed Jimmy Carter and his relationships with the common market in Japan. Now, when they dedicated the Jimmy Carter Library this year, you might have seen or heard the references to Ryosha Sasakawa, who gave $17 million to the Carter Library, one of the great and most powerful Japanese war criminals of World War II, Japanese Mafia, and the relationship of Sasakawa to Jimmy Carter came through the Trilateral Commission. So this is the Brzezinski that is making up the plans for the next few years. And Marchetti said Brzezinski and his Trilateral's colleagues gradually convinced Carter through his naval training of the necessity for this program, for the Star Wars program, for the nuclear strike forces, for our offensive strikes, and also for the decapitation program that Brzezinski is looking forward to. And as he announced last week, the next trouble area will be Southeast Asia. January the 20th, 1987, the New York Times had an article, Privatizing Foreign Policy. And this is very, very important, again, to my hypothesis of how these occasions in wars and confrontations are conducted by a handful of people. And they're referring to the Reagan administration, and the article is written by Martin Tolchin. Several members of Congress say that the Reagan administration is following a pattern of using private industry to run domestic operations, and in addition to that, which he brags about, they are making an unlawful effort to privatize foreign policy as exemplified in the Iran-Contra operations. The critics say that the Constitution and the Congress were circumvented by the use of middlemen who arranged financing of arms, sale of arms, transfer of money to rebels. They're aided by solicitation of private sources. And again, I read to you a few weeks ago the meetings of Fred Eakley calling in private parties under the guise of the Defense Department that would appear as humanitarian but that are directly tied to the Defense Department. And this article goes on about a Contragate being far more significant than Watergate break-in, which, and this author is wrong, was domestic politics and a cover-up, but that this is more damaging. Watergate was not domestic alone, but I'll discuss that at another time, and I have before. But this is about the privatization, and it is being expressed in newspaper articles, if you read them, quite a few of them, and people are catching on. And the New York Times author says the Constitution intends that foreign policy be formulated by the president and the Congress in a public manner. It does not suggest that private groups can conduct American foreign policy in secrecy. Now, this is a quotation of Representative Lee Hamilton of Indiana, who's chairman of the House Select Committee investigating the Iran-Contra operations. Some of you might make a tape recording and send for the sheets and bibliography that goes with this broadcast and remind him that the people being chosen by Caspar Weinberger to make the policies for the next 20 years are not elected by the Congress, and the future president that's elected doesn't make the decisions. This is the same sneaky thing that Eisenhower did with Richard Nixon prior to John Kennedy's being elected in 1960. They made all the policies for the invasion of Cuba in 1961 and told John Kennedy he had to go ahead with it. And all of a sudden, John Kennedy said, there's a hidden government behind my back that he can't function. He fired Alan Dulles. He said, I came in as president, and these decisions are made before me. When you go against the decisions that are made 20 years in advance, you get your head blown off. And the same people involved with the Bay of Pigs, the Laos drug dealing, the Contra-Iran scale were all involved in the murder of John Kennedy or the cover-up, the exact same teams. And I'll be doing a lot more on that in future weeks. So we have Representative Hamilton saying that the Constitution says that policies made by the President of the Congress. Well, we don't know who our president will be 2 years from now. So why don't we kick Mr. Caspar Weinberger out and the National Security Council and Mr. Fritz Kramer and Brzezinski and Henry Kissinger, none of them elected, and have an open foreign policy when the next president is elected and the people who elect him tell them what they want. It's the other way around. People are sent to Congress and they are told by the National Security Council what's good for them. And the things that I've been talking on the air for the past 16 years are finally getting into the news. Senator Daniel Patrick Monahan, not really a great liberal, a Democrat from New York, said the shift away from the formal foreign policy channels was the work of true believers who feel that the government faced dangers beyond the ideological range of Congress, the Secretary of State, and the Joint Chief of Staff. Now, that is the Fourth Reich. That is Martin Bormann. That is Henry Kissinger. That is Fritz Kramer. The true believers feel that the government can't understand the ideological range, Congress, the Joint Chiefs. That's because they are American-born for the most part, except for a few of them. And Zbigniew Brzezinski comes in, like Victor Marchetti said, with his 600 years of hatred of Poland versus Russia, and he tells us what we have to do. Herbert Hoover was using the money that was sent to feed the Belgians after the war and was arming the Tsarist Solidaris because he owned over 2 million or billion in holdings, forest minerals in Russia, and he wanted his investment back. The great conspiracy by Sayers and Kahn describes Herbert Hoover's investments in Tsarist Russia. Kissinger, Henry Kissinger, is from Germany, and their background is European. It's not American. And they have an ideological shtick that Mr. Monahan is saying is different than ours, and therefore they're telling us what we need. Monahan said they believe that since government doesn't understand dangers, it is necessary to circumvent the government. The result, the critic says, was that a parallel government with its own treasury, its own air force, communications network, and chain of command accountable to neither the State Department nor the Congress is going on. And that was the gist of my Watergate story in 1972 called Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? That this hidden government made all the decisions and excluded people from the decision-making process. And the Watergate arrest was due to a little fracture in that system whereby you would get a view of the system, and always standing outside to direct it and manipulate it were Henry Kissinger and Alexander Haig, who never got a slap on the wrist. Well, Richard Nixon may fall out of office, or Ronald Reagan may fall out of office. Now, this article about privatizing foreign policy brings me back to a record, the congressional record of September 15th, 1983. That was just 3 years ago, and I've cited it on the air many times, but it may be new for new listeners, and I just want to refer to it again. It was in the congressional record. It was put there by Representative Henry Gonzalez, questioning Kissinger Associates, saying that Henry Kissinger has lied in his presence in Paris in 1973 and other times, that he doesn't trust his decision-making. This was in 1983 that he was telling the members of Congress, and it is published page HC999 of Congressional Records. If you want to look it up, September the 15th, 1983, paragraph number 1650. Page H699, Congressional Record, House of Representatives, where Henry Gonzalez says that Kissinger is not only an advisor to the president, he is a hired gun set up as in the form of Kissinger Associates, and this is the private company, ready to advise anybody about foreign policy problems in the United States if the price is right. Among his associates is Brent Scowcroft, lately of the commission that tried to rationalize the MX program by producing a contradiction in terms, a program called for deployment that is totally vulnerable in the name of making the United States invulnerable. Now, Scowcroft has been appointed by Ronald Reagan's team, not Reagan, but his team, to investigate the National Security Council at this time with John Tower, the gentleman who brought Marina Oswald to this country for the job she did best in covering up the Kennedy assassination in Lee Oswald's role. And Scowcroft is on that committee right now. And, of course, he's a member of Kissinger Associates, and Kissinger and Brzezinski and Fritz Kramer remain untouched, and Fred Eakley, as they try to examine the National Security Council, which is ridiculous. Now, Henry Gonzalez not only said that Henry Kissinger is a hired gun, but what's pertinent to this article in the New York Times and the quotation of our congressman at this time is that Henry Kissinger is also literally taking over the State Department, or has. He said he uses his commission to boost his visibility, and that appointment was to be in charge of Central America, advise the president on Central America. He builds his credibility and visibility to make it clear that he is, in fact, a State Department of his own, without official portfolio, ready for sale or rent to those who have the money to pay. And when the New York Times printed this story about privatizing foreign policy, that's exactly what has happened, and it's always been in the charge of Henry Kissinger. Those of you who have followed my broadcast for many, many years, remember how excited I was when the Contragate story started to be exposed, similar to the cracks, not only in Reagan's Teflon, but the cracks in Watergate, and these events beginning to unfold. But I have shared my excitement with you because for years, 16 years on the air, I've talked about that other government, and I've never seen it so clearly in writing, such as articles now that the foreign policy has given out privatizing, because this is exactly what Congressman Gonzales was saying about Henry Kissinger and accusing him of being a State Department, our State Department being leased to him, saying that 3 years ago. And this is exactly what is in the newspaper now, that these are people that work outside the Congress, outside the courts, even outside the military. They have their own banks, their own agents, and so forth. And he talks about, in the congressional records, it is quite a bit about Henry Kissinger, the hired gun, and Henry Kissinger, the State Department, and when it's for lease or rent, that is Mr. Fritz Kramer and Daniel Graham and Fred Eakley, and they're using the same agents, the ones I cited earlier in the program, for all of their operations. They were in control as soon as they had John Kennedy murdered, Robert Kennedy murdered, and Nixon in office. They can continue along the lines that they had planned when General Eisenhower was president and Nixon was vice president. Now, there was an article in the Progressive, February 10, 1987, Who Guards the Guardians? It says, the system of checks and balances is one of the comforting myths of the American Republic. In the vast, murky realm called national security, there isn't even a feeble attempt to apply checks and balances. Wrapped in the protective cloak of secrecy, the intelligence apparatus goes its own way, indifferent to the structure of Congress, which it rarely and feebly applies, and immune from public scrutiny. One day in October, the director of Central Intelligence Agency, with all but incalculable resources for mischief-making at his command, began to suffer seizures. He was rushed to the hospital, underwent surgery for a brain tumor, which was malignant. What every medical practitioner knows, but hardly anyone mentioned in public, was that such disabilities cause profound changes in patients' attitudes, judgments, and conducts long before they are diagnosed. To what extent did Casey's illness cloud his thinking and affect his actions, and who was in a position to monitor him? Then they go on to say the President's National Security Council was run and coordinated by a spook in charge, a Marine Corps Colonel Oliver North, who turns out to have his own history of emotional instability, as well as a strong penchant for stretching the truth on official documents. Who watches him and his mental condition? Casey and North and the rest of the national security establishment were accountable, of course, to the president, and he, we were told, may have had key decisions made while he was zonked out on sedatives, administered after he underwent surgery. Attorney General Meese, as reporter said to members of the House Intelligence Committee and other intimates of the president, have described him since the scandal as paralyzed, living in another world, withdrawn. What did Ronald Reagan know? What is his mental condition? Where are the checks and balances on these people and their minds? And there was another article, a long article in the San Jose Mercury, December the 25th. General destroyed the records of North's illnesses. Why did a general in the Army, General Richard Schultz, C-H-U-L-Z-E, former Marine director, not Army, of personnel, who's now deceased. He was a long supporter of North's career, and he was in charge of the records of his mental problems and his hospitalization in 1974 and a threat of suicide that North had. He was holding a .45 caliber pistol, and this particular deceased, goodness knows what he died of, maybe his own suicide. He destroyed, before he died, the medical records of Oliver North, and everyone knows from various stories that were around him how crazy he is. And he also claimed that he was doing mind control and influencing Ronald Reagan and suggested he had mind control over Ronald Reagan. I believe that Oliver North is a product of a Candy Jones type of mind. His sobbing when he had to take the fifth on the stand there was not a Mr. Macho as compared to G. Gordon Liddy, who did what he did and believed what he did and knew why he did it. This was a whimpering kind of change of character who seemed to not only protect himself legally, but was under mind control. The fact that he was hospitalized at Bethesda Hospital in 1974 from December 74 to January 75 isn't as important as the fact that what they did to him, whether he was when he was stationed overseas or in the hospital, will never be told to us except the doctor who had his records conveniently died. And before he died, he destroyed the medical records of Mr. North. So we have a president in an extreme depression who doesn't understand why his polls have dropped. We have a CIA director whose brains have been literally fried, and a Oliver North in a condition that suggests that one of these three people was in any position or ability to make major decisions, foreign policy or domestic or anything else, for the United States government. And when you get an institution like the National Security Council that is so secretive, they can manipulate just about anything they want. There's a story this past week, Casey having trouble talking. I don't know why that makes the news. I don't think they do the operation unless they wanted to make sure he didn't talk. Another Washington Post story, Casey having trouble with speech, asked if he would have to replace Casey. Reagan said, "We're going to keep praying for his complete recovery." Well, Reagan can pray for all three of them now because none of them are going to recover from this. And whether you fry his brains or do a lobotomy or whatever, they're now claiming Casey's tumor has been in him, and he had a prostate tumor a year and a half ago. Of course, none of us knew that, you understand, and they didn't treat it, you understand, and now it's gone to his brain and all over his body. But he seemed very vigorous and was testifying quite clearly and seemed to know just what to do and what to say, and was to testify the next day when he had this seizure in the CIA building and was swiftly taken to the hospital to cover up whatever Casey did. And his whole administration has been horrendous as director of the CIA. January the 14th, the Washington Post has a story, Casey's tumor may have affected his testimony on Iran deal. Now they're saying that his testimony could have been wrong because he had a tumor in the head. That's what the other article suggested. Sources have said that a draft report on the arms affair in the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence criticized William Casey's testimony before the committee because he was less than candid. Translated, that means he lied. That criticism had to be amended on the theory that Casey, 73, might have been suffering from tumor effects. If there's a contradiction between what he said and what they think happened, they can say, well, you know, Casey's got a tumor. They said the tumor existed for months before it was discovered and might have affected brain functions such as short-term memory, concentration, processing of new information, and ability to answer complex questions. Now, if you go through the Watergate hearings, and I have all of those hearings on my library shelves, there was a don't recall, I can't recall, a loss of memory from John Mitchell on down, the loss of memory of the President of the United States, Richard Nixon. They all had a problem with concentration. They had a process of gathering information, an ability to know the relationships to each other, or even to know each other's names. The only one who remembered anything was John Dean when he broke the story and had a photographic memory of all the details. So the idea that Casey's tumor is any different than all the people who prospered after Watergate, Mr. Haldeman and Ehrlichman and Dean and G. Gordon Liddy and so forth. Liddy didn't testify. He took the Fifth and went to jail for 6 years. But the important thing is that they all had the same brain disease. This is a disease that comes with the job, with the National Security Council. Casey went ahead and hired people like Thomas Kleins, who was involved in a scandal of financial exploitation. He cleared out $2.5 million off of a Pentagon program and put it in his own pockets. As I say, I'll do more on Kleins next week. Casey's tumor goes along with the territory, and that quick cancer he had in the brain is interesting in lieu of the fact of the way that the medical condition of these other people isn't much different than Casey's. And Oliver North is acting like a wimpy baby and reverting to this infantilism, as Ronald Reagan is when they're pinned against the wall with some embarrassing things. And we will never have the medical records of North because, as I say, the general who had them is dead. Now, the Wall Street Journal had a long article January 22nd, just a week ago, front page story, "Under Siege, Revitalized for a Time, the CIA is Jolted by a Variety of Setbacks." And this has nothing to do with Casey's cancer at all. It tells how when Ronald Reagan came into power 6 years ago, he promised to restore the budget. Look at the debt. I don't have to talk about that. The morale. Look what he's done to that. The credibility of the CIA. Mr. Reagan now has to face the nation's intelligence budget and ask for more money and describe their CIA's analytical capabilities, and they're in deep trouble. Mr. Casey's worst mistake was squandering a golden opportunity to improve political foundations on which secret agencies operate in a democracy. He never accepted the web of laws governing intelligence operations that were woven after Watergate and the CIA scandals 10 years ago. He did not seek to amend them at all. Long before he had a brain cancer, he wasn't obeying any law for the past 6 years. And he was, when he was campaign manager for Ronald Reagan, he was able, with Edwin Meese and Max Ujell and a team of others, to steal Jimmy Carter's papers to cue the president so he could have a public debate and appear intelligent so that these front people in the National Security Council could keep their appointments and make the decisions for us for the next 20 years as they made for the past 20 years. Wall Street Journal says Mr. Casey, a lawyer himself, too often tried to outsmart or outflank the laws and Congress. At the same time, he ignored the key judgments of his own analysis. His penchant for going his own way was particularly evident in his passionate efforts to help the Nicaraguans, the insurgents, the Contras, and the American hostages in Lebanon, including CIA agent William Buckley. Mr. Casey turned over the management of the Contra operation to the National Security Council in 1984 when Congress prohibited the CIA from doing these operations. And that again goes to Mr. Kissinger, Brzezinski, Fritz Kramer, Fred Eakley. They turned the operations because the CIA would have to report to Congress, but the NSC doesn't have to report to Congress. So long before he had this brain tumor, he was functioning perfectly well by removing all the restrictions that were placed upon him and putting them in the hands of persons that he worked with in the CIA, going back to the 1960s, pulling them out of the CIA and Defense Department, like Thomas Kleins and Theodore Shackley and John Singlaub, General Singlaub, and that group, and then working with the National Security Council and then looking the other way and using his CIA attorney, Mr. Sporkin, to tell them they didn't have to tell Congress what was going on. In return, Mr. Sporkin just became a judge appointed by Reagan. And I have a lot more to do on Sporkin later. This article in the Wall Street Journal is interesting because it says the damage that the Iran-Nicaragua operation has done could be 100 times worse than Watergate a decade ago. 100 times worse. The mathematical equation of Contragate being 100 times worse is very interesting. And he blames a lot of it, of course, on the covert actions of Casey and transferring to that dangerous National Security Council. And then the article says the tragic explosion of the Space Challenger, along with the loss of two Air Force rockets and more than $1 million spy satellite, gave a dangerous blow to the technical side of American intelligence. Now, what was really bad about the Challenger tragedy is the fact that the President of the United States did have a hand in ordering it to be launched, and the payoffs and promotions of everyone involved in the launching that day have continued. The contracts have to go to Morton Thiokol. Mr. Fletcher is back. Alton Keel is in NATO. Mr. Graham is in the science division. And people move from where they were to a higher position, which doesn't solve the problem of why the Challenger exploded. But everybody knows in Washington about the Challenger explosion. Everyone who has any position of power, they know about the Korean airline explosion that I'll be doing more later. And what we have in Washington are a group of people blackmailing each other, covering their bases, causing these deaths, lying, just as Admiral Poindexter said, we can give disinformation to Libya. This is a town, this Washington, D.C., that is in turmoil. And when the Wall Street Journal has an article by John Walcott that the Iran gate is 100 times worse than Watergate, you sit around and wait. The committees are just beginning their investigations. And that is quite a strong statement from the Wall Street Journal that it is 100 times worse. Keep in mind that the House and the Senate and the chief prosecutor haven't even begun their work, and they're citing things like the Challenger explosion and the CIA and the transfer of it. to the NSC. And, of course, the NSC is that body that has to be cleaned out, the most dangerous group. Well, this 1 hour is up, and I don't have time to continue with some of the shenanigans of the NSC. But believe me, I'll be back with that for a long, long time to come, because that is the group that has to be observed and removed. It isn't enough to get Ronald Reagan or George Bush out of office, but the people who write their policies, who are heading us towards this next war, are the people to remove and to keep on the surface, to discover and study every time they come in the news. This is Mae Brussel. The program is titled World Watchers. I'll be back with you next week to continue some more about that secret government that is getting more visible every single day.